You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 9th, 2015. And what's up, guys? We're talking about YouTube.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name's Scott Jusser.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation of games. We do this podcast every week. We've been doing this podcast, blood, sweat, and tears into this podcast. We also do a YouTube channel, Scott.
Sometimes we put dumb shit on YouTube.
We play games. We shoot the shit. It's a good opportunity for us. I think one of the reasons we do it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to have just random conversations, which we often have anyway, saved for posterity. Yeah. One day I'm going to be 85, I'll be going senile, I'll forget any of these things ever happened.
I'll be like, these guys were idiots.
They're what, assholes? So today on the podcast, we're talking a little bit about YouTube. We're actually talking about it for a couple bigger reasons, more than just the fact that we do one. One of the first is the recent hullabaloo stirred up by some comments that Jimmy Kimmel made. If you're listening to this, there's a 50% chance you don't know who Jimmy Kimmel is. Jimmy Kimmel is a late-night talk show host. Is it The Late Show with Jimmy Kimmel? Is that his baby?
I mean, it's on ABC, which is perennially the, like, also ran.
Maybe The Late Show?
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
It's not the one that Stephen Colbert's on, and it's not the one that Jimmy Fallon is on.
But what we should say is this is yet another of the shows in a long history of late night television.
Yes.
It's maintained that form, and maybe to some extent it feels threatened by modern media, because Jimmy Kimmel for a while recently made a comment about how it's really silly that people watch other people play video games on YouTube. Mm-hmm. The resulting backlash from YouTube fans was one that was full of vitriol.
And fully expected.
And, yeah, completely, completely predictable. Many people said they wished Jimmy Kimmel would get cancer and die in a fire.
Yeah.
All sorts of atrocities.
Called him a cabbage, which I thought was really innovative.
I mean, there's a good chance he's a cabbage. I don't know.
The conspiracy goes straight to the top.
And then just, I think it was yesterday? Last night?
It was recently, anyway.
Recently, Jimmy Kimmel brought on two YouTubers, Mark Plyer and May Jensen,
I don't know her YouTube handle, but that is correct.
And he basically played a game with them and was talking to them. And it's kind of a really sad video. I kind of implore people to watch it, because Jimmy Kimmel is so clearly out of touch. Mm-hmm. And he tries to do what all late show hosts do, which is make a funny, you know, a bit, basically. He's trying to do a bit.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, why do people want to do this? Yada, yada, yada.
Mrs. May, by the way, is her YouTube handle. Sorry. Yeah.
But instead of it being a funny thing, they respond to him seriously, like, dude, we just want you to, like, enjoy and understand why people do what we do, and we love what we do. Like, they're answering really sincerely. And he has a Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah.
And a zapper. Yeah. And it's just, God, it's so brutal to watch.
It really is.
Anyway, so I don't know. I feel like one of the reasons I want to have this conversation is because I feel like YouTube and games in general, on both live streams and online, have really blown up over the past few years.
Yeah.
And I think there's a sense in watching Jimmy Kimmel fumble so hard that there's a sort of desperation to remain relevant in what is increasingly becoming a very confusing world for people who don't consume that media as consistently as millions and millions and millions of other people.
So to start with, should we? And there's another comparison that I'm thinking about a lot, which is Conan's stuff.
Okay.
You ever watch his video game stuff?
He does the, what is it, Clueless Gamer?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if he's ever done like an actual like Conan meets PewDiePie or something like that.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's only a matter of time, right?
The Clueless Gamer is a great example because the Clueless Gamer is funny for a lot of people. I don't watch it that often. I don't find it super humorous, but the whole bit of Clueless Gamer is that he is representative of the out of touch older audience, the older media mainstream.
Yeah.
And what's funny is how he fumbles at trying to understand the modern stuff.
And the thing I like about Coden stuff too is that sometimes it's inadvertently like excellent games criticism, because he'll he'll just point out something like why would that person care about how shiny their sword is right now?
Yeah,
he just killed 17 people.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like that sort of thing.
He,
like
he finds humor at the absurdity of games that we've all grown accustomed to at this point, being, you know, primary gamers.
And it's also like a, it is an act, because like Conan is like pretty savvy in terms of like culture in general. It's not like, and also like these are the game companies giving him these games and saying like, please, please, please play the new Mortal Kombat on your show.
With
like,
Marjon Lynch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it's this is a huge, like, you know, PR opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing The Witcher recently, and there was that sex scene where they're on the unicorn.
Yeah.
Like, that's an absurd scene anyway. So to see, like, Conan actually respond to that as a normal human being would, sort of, which is to ask everybody to leave the room so he can have private time with his unicorn lovemaking scene. You know, that's a good job at poking fun of that.
Yeah.
I feel like Jimmy Kimmel was hitting down a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
as we were talking about before the podcast, he thinks he's hitting down.
Yeah.
But really, he's just hopefully unaware that the collective viewership of those two people he had on the couch outshone him easily.
So let's talk about, we did a little research before the podcast. Yeah, we did a little numbers,
right.
And first of all, it's like ridiculously hard to get any like good statistics on who's watching television.
Right.
And also that's just a bigger podcast about like that question exactly. Who is watching television?
Right.
Like who goes home and watches television? Like, it's crazy, right?
I mean, what's funny too is the reason Jimmy Kimmel and that Conan sketch in particular are popular is because they release their bits of comedy now in YouTube videos anyway.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who are watching Jimmy Kimmel or Conan's Clueless Gamer are the same people who actually do spend a lot of time watching games.
Yep.
Which is why the backlash, I think, was so strong against Jimmy Kimmel's insults.
Yes.
Because people were like, hey, you know what? I actually think you're kind of funny.
Yeah.
I think these guys are funny. Fuck you for, you know, undermining what is essentially my mainstay of entertainment.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that point is the point that brings me to the question of, do these folks like Jimmy Kimmel, like, are they surrounded by like yes men saying like, yeah, good job, Mr. Kimmel, like knockout show? Or are people purposefully shielding folks from new media? Or are they telling them, no, Jimmy, the reason why people still watch you is because we slice up your show into YouTube clips, and guess what? It's the same people watching PewDiePie.
Yeah, like,
watching
so Jimmy
you.
Kimmel's like in his office, and he's like, what is this PewDiePie? Starts googling it, and an intern runs in and slams his laptop down.
No, Jimmy, no. Everything is fine.
Yeah, what is PewDiePie? It's a new type of pie. It's kind of like pecan.
All these hosts have like old like Nokia razors, you know? Like, I'm sorry, Motorola razor phones.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, the iPhone never happened.
Yeah, it's like that movie Goodbye Lenin. Like, they're all pretending that it's actually 1995. Poor Jimmy's like wandering around like a scene, like he has dementia or something.
Oh man, that's what makes me wonder, because it's like, it is like that same audience. I mean, that's the only reason like I ever watch any of those shows, like Conan or Ellen or any of these like talk show people. It's because Saturday Night Live. Like, the only reason I ever watch those is because it's like they are custom packaged for the internet now.
Yeah. It goes out on Twitter.
Right.
I mean, that's literally the only way I ever find anything by Jimmy Kimmel.
Anyway, okay, so the point is, we were trying to find how many people...
The point is, fuck you, Jimmy Kimmel, we're calling you out.
Come at me, Kimmel.
So we were looking at numbers.
Yeah.
On average, what's the viewership like for Jimmy Kimmel's Late Show?
So we found a variety of numbers. The peak that we found was around the NBA Finals time frame, which was in the summer, like the June corridor of 2015, and they were reaching like into the millions, like, because the NBA Finals would lead into Jimmy Kimmel, so he'd have like a good lead in from people watching the game, and then they would stay on that channel to watch him. By the way, staying on channels, like, again, so weird.
It is so weird. Like, I haven't had cable for 5-6 years now, longer.
And I mean, I haven't had cable since we lived in Cloyne.
Yeah.
So since 2000.
Since like a decade ago.
Yeah, it's approaching 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And so they were thinking, they were, you know, by whatever, I don't know, Nielsen or whoever measures this shit, they were thinking that, like,
there's a guy named Nielsen, by the way, he peeks in through people's windows.
It's Leslie Nielsen.
Psst, what are you watching?
They were thinking that at the peak, we were looking at maybe like 1.7 million people, 1.4, like depending on which game it was.
Hey, that's plenty of people watching your show. That's about 1.4 million more than we have listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that's almost half of what we have listening to this podcast. But then, so we were like, okay. And then we looked at some other numbers, and maybe like the average or the more like not sports lead-in were... maybe we were looking at less than a million, like yep. somewhere in between 500,000 and a million. Like, it's a little sketchy, but the right. point is we are talking in the low millions.
Yes.
Then we were like, okay, well, let's take a look at Markiplier.
Markiplier?
Markiplier. Let's
take Very a look. Popular YouTuber. Right. One of the top YouTubers.
So we're like, okay.
But not the top, not, importantly.
No, not the top YouTuber. But the one that was talking to Jimmy Kimmel on the segment. So we're like, yes. okay, let's take a look at his. So currently, as we record this, he has 9.2 million subscribers.
9.249
yeah.
million subscribers.
Which means that, like, anytime he puts something on YouTube, 9 million people get some sort of notification.
Yep. Unless they have the notifications turned off. But that's a small fraction. But even so. So here's another example.
Yeah.
One day ago, he released a video that was part 7, yeah. mind you, part 7 of an Until Dawn playthrough. 558,000 people watched that video.
Which is a Jimmy Kimmel show.
Which is a Jimmy Kimmel show. But yeah. that's, I mean, again, one video, part seven. Of an Until Dawn playthrough. You could easily go through his viewings and I'm sure find videos that
yeah, are far, multi-million far ones, more higher. Like...
And again, that's just one guy, right? He's Jimmy Kimmel's bit recently, yesterday or yeah. whatever, was Markiplier and... Mrs. May,
yeah.
And I'm sure both of them have comparable ratings
yeah.
across their YouTube channel yep. collectively. Also, they're part of the larger Maker umbrella,
yeah.
which itself is representative of a large number of YouTubers whose collective audience outweighs that of Jimmy Kimmel and just dwarfs it to an absurd amount.
Yeah.
But, you know, that bit does not come to me as though... I don't get the sense that someone came to Jimmy Kimmel and said, the people who you're on couch with in this yeah. session are your peers.
Yeah.
Not in a fucking million years did I get the sense he believed them to be equals.
Right.
Which I think, again, is one of the problems with the way that he sees himself. Like, you are out of touch
yeah.
in that you don't understand these things, but also the people who... watched late night television 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that age demographic, they're just not watching you anymore.
Right.
They're watching these guys.
Exactly. The 18-year-old in 1991 is different from the 18-year-old today.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily rushing home.
And hey, you know what? Like, that's yeah. okay, man. Like, you yeah. know what? Someone's got to be, you know, holding the fort that when we all abandon and move to the other fort or, you know, whatever.
Someone's got to be holding Fort ABC.
Sure, right? Like, there is an old guard, you know? Look, people still watch Matlock, all right? I don't know who those people are, but they still watch Matlock. So there's a reason for you to exist. But to not fully appreciate the weight that is like the new media, you just, there's no way you look like you reflect the times.
Well, that's what I mean, I think that's what makes me so interested in how much these celebrities actually know. Because like, if you look at any of these YouTubers, like the top YouTubers have more subscribers than like Rihanna
yeah.
or like Nicki Minaj or whatever. You know, it's like the top pop stars don't have as many subscribers as some like random kids that started like YouTube channels.
Yep.
But I wonder if they know that.
Yep.
You know, like that's the thing. Is anyone telling them? Like, are their publicists saying, hey, guess what? There's this weirdo from Sweden.
So what about this theory, right? What if they do know and this is like part of their bit? That yeah. their bit is that they don't know.
That they're
just like
touch.
Clueless Gamer,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because what could you possibly do anyway, though? Like, you're not going to change your show completely. There's yeah. still some money in there.
Well, I mean, like...
Unless you're spiraling into, like, an existential crisis, you have to do something.
Well, I mean, I think there's something worth discussing about, like, okay, are these people the peers of Jimmy Kimmel? So I
mean, yeah. Don't you think so?
But, I mean, it depends on how we're measuring. Like, if we're talking about, like, comedy or something. Like, I think that Jimmy Kimmel's probably a better writer than any of these people.
Sure, but Jimmy Kimmel has a team of writers.
Correct, but I mean, he's a stand-up comic. Like, there's a reason why he got to where he is. That's you know, true. Like, I think he's, you know...
But he's selling something different, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, if you are a pasta place and the pizza place opens up next... Look, I love fucking food analogies. You can rot in hell, yeah. There's a pizza place and a pasta place, right? Uh-huh. The pizza place opens up next door. You're still both Italian.
This is fucking Italian on saying it. You're both Italian.
But, like, you can't pretend, like, look, if the pizza place has a line out the block, you can tell yourself, oh, I'm true Italian all you want. Like, it does. They're selling something different to that audience.
Oh, the fallacy of no true Italian.
I mean, in this analogy, we're Parmesan, okay? Uh-huh. So we're adding some salt. So what I'm saying is they might not be peers in terms of how they apply themselves
but
in that particular medium.
They're still jamming starchy food down your gullet.
They're selling different goods, but they're selling it to... They both want to sell that good to the same audience. You see what I'm saying?
Maybe they do.
So to that extent, I would say, yes, absolutely, they're peers.
I would suggest that if we're trying to figure out what the audience is and what the peer group is, we take a look at the advertisers.
Yeah, I mean, advertisers love YouTubers.
But what I'm saying is what type of advertisements? Like, you're going to see advertisements for, like, Viagra and Morgan Stanley on primetime television.
But again, that's changing, right? Like, yeah, so right now, a lot of the advertisements you see on gaming networks are endemic, right? Yeah. So it's all going to be advertisements for games.
Yeah.
And that's part of what sells right now. Mm. But non-endemic, like, you know, fucking Motrin, like, I don't know, like... Wendy's, you know, Advil, like these people understand that the viewership of some of these YouTubers is so astronomically high that if you can get an ad deal with them, it could be quite lucrative for you.
Yeah.
The question is how do you make it successful? Mm-hmm. Right? How does it make a natural fit? And two, a lot of the people in those sales offices are probably equally as out of touch as Jimmy Kimmel, and you have to convince them that it's worth it.
That is true. And I think the interesting thing about the, like, endemic versus, like, non-endemic ads is that if I'm like, Call of Duty or whatever...
You are Call of Duty.
I am Mr. Call of Duty. Like, why would I buy ads on, like, a gaming website? Because, like, those are the people that already... You've sold them. You know, like, I feel like the endemic ads is kind of an increasingly weird thing because they're going to talk about Call of Duty on GameSpot no matter what. Like, well, you know, why would you advertise on that?
I mean, I think part of it is that there are a lot of people who haven't bought Call of Duty, right? Like, there are people who are hardcore Battlefield fans or, you know, Rainbow Six got delayed a little while. Maybe they have time or maybe they have the budget, right?
Like,
you're going after people who are... The more casual types, like, they're not you and I where we play, like, all of the games. Yeah. They have a limited budget, and there's an opportunity here to bring them back into the fold. Or you get companies like, you know, Ubisoft or some of the others where maybe something happened that people lost trust with that brand, and now they have to sort of bring them back into the fold.
So of Ubisoft, our games aren't broken this year.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly right. And that makes sense, and that's totally okay, right? You go after those same audiences. You know, to some extent, it also makes sense for even, you know, Advil to sell to these guys. You get headaches watching, playing games sometimes.
I get headaches fucking looking at all these YouTube stars.
I mean, going back a little bit, though, to the discussion about whether or not they're peers. One of the things I found interesting was the accusations and the defenses that were coming up in some of the comment threads. And what I saw was a common thing was people were trying to justify why they spent so much time watching other people play video games. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a portion of them... A hefty portion were saying, this is just like popcorn television. This is like reality show. This is what I do. It's funny. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
Another group of them were saying, oh, this is like sports. And that there were a lot of comparisons saying, oh, you know, I think this watching someone play Five Nights at Freddy's is just as silly as watching people, you know, paint their bodies blue for a Patriots game or something, right? I find it weird that I mean, I guess it's not, like we said, it's not surprising, but I find it weird that people are so defensive about watching this form of entertainment and are constantly comparing it to things that are relatively understood, even though widely popular, to be sort of low on the cultural rank.
Yeah.
I didn't see anybody in the comments saying, this is the new, like, this is fucking Mad Men. This is, you know, Game of Thrones or something. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's just, what shitty form of media is this representing? What vacuous form of media is it?
Have you ever had to explain to someone why you do or do not watch, like, Let's Plays or live streams or anything?
No, because I do. I watch Let's Plays sometimes, and I watch live streams.
But I mean, have you ever tried to explain to someone why you do it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, what do you go to?
I mean, like, I mean, I guess in this case, maybe the sports angle makes sense. But when I'm watching esports, it's like, well, there's high level skill involved here. Like, I'm appreciating it from the perspective of it's a pure joy to watch anybody excel at something to such an extreme. And then for the Let's Play side, you know, a lot of it's personality driven. So there's a level of humor and people that I like to watch who fill their channels with humor, and they laugh and they have a good time and they make me think about something. That's that's good enough. And then two, you know, I don't have time to play every game, and sometimes I just want to watch someone play the game so that I can get a sense of what it's like to actively play. It's difficult. We've talked about how hard it is to actually get an appreciation for a game without ever having played it.
Yeah.
But there is some value in it, right? Like, you watch Giant Bomb Let's Plays sometimes.
All the time, man. Like, actually, like, Giant Bomb is one of my, like, main TV channels, if you think about it.
Nerd!
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really weird, but, like, I was watching one the other day where they were... They had this project where they played through all of the Metal Gears in order to prep for Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
Because one of them had never played a Metal Gear Solid game, and so they just went through all of them. And then they wanted to... They didn't want to play, like, the PSP games, because, god damn it, why would you want to play one of those games? But, like, they... So, instead, they found a YouTube movie that someone had done a Let's Play of, but artfully edited it down to like a half an hour of the entire game.
Wow.
Or maybe it was more than an hour. It was like an hour or so of like a huge Metal Gear game.
So did they stream that video and commenting on that video?
Yes.
That's some next level and so meta YouTubing.
Hana right walked into the room and...
Oh, I'm just watching people watch people play a game.
That's what she said. So she's like, okay. So
Scott, we should have recorded this.
Yeah, like, it's like she made. So she's like, okay, one guy recorded himself playing a game, edited that game, played it on YouTube.
Yep.
Two people watched that YouTube clip and recorded it, put it on the internet, and now you're watching it.
That's right.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Because like, I got to know what happened in Peace Walker.
Sure. Like, yeah. I get it.
And so, but it all boils down to. That is the, like you were saying, it is the personality driven thing. Yeah. Like for me, that is the same thing as the reason why people watch a talk show or soap operas or like any of that stuff. It's my stories, right? Yeah. Like these, like I find those people amusing and relatable and it's entertaining, you know?
I think that relatability goes a long way, by the way.
Yeah.
Like when you watch Jimmy Kimmel up there and he's wearing his suit and tie. Yeah. You know, there are times when talk show hosts come off as really unlikable,
right,
unsympathetic individuals.
I think there's a reason why so many people like us always gravitated towards Conan, because he was kind of like a dorky nerd that somehow like got a TV show.
Yeah, he's always up there like, what am I doing
here? Yeah.
Like, this is not my beautiful wife.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that watching these videos, too, as a form of entertainment isn't... It's not something that I feel... sort of pigeonholes you into being a community member that does this, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... There are people who see themselves as, oh, I watch YouTube videos. I'm part of the YouTube
community.
I'm
a YouTuber.
Yeah, and there are plenty of people who create short YouTubers and see themselves... they create short YouTube videos and see themselves as YouTubers, and that's great, and there's a subculture there. But there's, I'm sure, the millions of people who watch Markiplier's videos are probably not necessarily watching every single one of his videos.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so while there are times I feel like I'm desperately out of touch, I don't understand why everybody loves PewDiePie so much.
Right.
I do subscribe to PewDiePie, partly for science. And there are some videos that I actually really get a kick out of, and I laugh and I have a good time.
Yeah.
And then I move on to something else. It's okay, right?
Yeah.
Like, it almost in some way feels like there's almost more freedom when watching YouTube videos to bounce around to such an extreme. Unlike, you know, you're not picking Jimmy Kimmel as, this is what I do every week now.
Yeah, this is my 11:30.
Yeah, which did happen. I mean, even as a kid, I remember there were certain days and times, right? Even TGIF on like WB,
this is
right?
Boy Meets World right here, man.
Yeah, like this is when people watch those shows.
Yeah.
There's no longer the strict allegiance, that now you can bounce around and have brand loyalty to individuals because they are likable, entertaining individuals, and you enjoy what they have to say, and you hang out. And when you don't feel like listening to them or watching them, then you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you leave a nice review, and it's experiencepoints.net, and we really like you.
But, I mean, it is that sense of that, though. I think that's what's so powerful about it, because the only reason why the people that listen to this thing and watch our videos listen to it is because, and we've met these people in person when they tell them hacks.
We provide all the sweet hacks.
Just so many.
The hottest of scoops.
So many cheat codes. But it's like people come up to us and they're like, oh yeah, like, I feel like I know you already.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing, but that's...
But here's the thing. They do. I have no life outside of this existence.
When these microphones turn off, we just fade away.
We're the Mises from Rick and Morty.
But, like, I think that's why it's so powerful, because there's this, like, constant search for authenticity.
Yes.
And something that comes from YouTube... And also, I think this is true to a large extent, is, like, you are seeing a raw version of whatever that production is.
Yeah.
You know? Like, every one of Jimmy Kimmel's shows probably costs hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to put on.
Yep.
In terms of, like, paying people salaries and lighting and getting an audience in there and, like, craft services, like, and all that shit.
Ugh, craft services. Why don't we have craft services on this podcast, Scott? I saw a cake in your fucking kitchen. You did not slice it up. You did not offer me any. Sorry,
you're not a Teamster, so you don't get any of that shit. I'm so pissed
right now.
No, you can only get cake after the podcast. I mean,
you can't tell that when you guys are listening to this podcast, but Scott feeds me dessert after this. It's a treat for me doing good.
That's all the payment.
He also rubs my head.
Good casting. But it's like, you feel like when you see someone like PewDiePie, or even to a weird extent, us, there is a sense that you know that person in a way that you don't know Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
You know, because, like, we present ourselves in a way that our personality is kind of what you hear is what you get.
Yeah.
And that's it. And yeah. I think that's the thing.
Yeah, because there's not some secret I've been holding on to until this episode, right? Like, I'm not secretly, like, I'm a huge boat enthusiast. That's not a thing. Like, I don't go home after this and go, man, I'm so glad I don't have to talk about boats on the podcast. My true passion.
I actually hate video games.
All of this talk of authenticity feels like a really great segue to talk about the FTC ruling.
Oh, yeah.
And popping that bubble a little bit. Yeah. So recently, another YouTube thing that came down the pipe, the FTC basically agreed that... Who was it? Was it...
It was Microsoft. It was Microsoft and Machinima.
They had basically...
Microsoft had paid Machinima, I believe, was the situation.
Had broken a rule, an FTC ruling, that if you're going to be advertising on your media channel, it must be clear that your thing is well revealed to be an advertisement.
Right.
So the concern was that these people were playing games, they were talking about them positively, and they never revealed that they had been paid to talk about those games positively.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear all the crazy gamergators out there talking about, like, paranoia and inside jobs, this is what they should be talking about instead of just being, like, hate mongers.
Yeah.
Excuse
me. The influencers, these were people that were part of the Machinima network that Machinima was saying, hey, promote the Xbox.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Here we go.
So I feel like that ruling doesn't necessarily get rid of the idea that people are being authentic, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these guys were just told to do it, right? I mean, that's the other thing about being, quote unquote, being authentic and being amateur and coming from the ground up. They don't always know the law in the media space, right? That being said, I think it does a good job. And this came up a while back when we were talking about how much money PewDiePie makes as well, to sort of wipe off the illusion that these people don't cater to either, you know, other influences in terms of the design of their personas and how they put themselves out there and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm glad about that, because it means that the people that Jimmy Kimmel is ridiculing aren't actually all that different from Jimmy Kimmel himself when he does, like, a Doritos, you know, advertisement or something.
Once you get to a certain size and scale, and once enough money is involved, basically, and it's not just raw dollars, it's proportion of dollars that makes a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
Like the weird FTC Machinima stuff was, like, I mean, this sounds really callous, but it's chump change. Like, 30 grand is, like, sure, that's a big deal to me and you, but, like, in terms of, like, big advertising... Right. That's garbage. You know, that's nothing, right?
I mean, people turn down ad dollars like that because it's not enough.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, $30,000 is, like, part of a sales cycle.
Yep.
You know, that's the money you spend to get the deal.
Yeah, I'll only, like, put a bumper sticker on my car for $30,000. Actually, you know what? I'll put a bumper sticker on my car for $30,000 if you're listening to this.
I won't put a bumper sticker on my car for $30,000. Someone else has to do it for me. But, I mean, like, the point is, once... the proportion of money gets important enough to the people being influenced, that's when they become no different from, like, the scale is different, but the proportion is the same. Yeah. Like, it's the same thing as if someone rolled up to Jimmy Kimmel and was like, hey, here's 30 million. Yep. Please endorse the Xbox.
Well, and this is exactly, but again, this is, again, why the YouTube logic, like, that YouTube as a source of entertainment and people who play games in particular is so much more interesting than what Jimmy Kimmel has to offer. Because if you decide, you know what, Jimmy Kimmel isn't funny anymore, there's too many ads or whatever, your options are limited in regards to late shows.
Right.
There's what, three?
Yeah.
Four?
I mean,
you could go to the dark doldrums that is Comedy Central after 2 in the morning. But if you decide, you know what, PewDiePie and Markiplier and Mrs. May aren't cutting it anymore, there's so many YouTube videos out there. Some of them are really good and only have, you know, a few thousand subscribers. Like
YouTube.com/exp.net. These kids have moxie. They're really going places.
And God, they really love Mountain Dew. This podcast brought to you by Mountain Dew.
Yeah, it's, I think that that evolution will be the most interesting thing to see, like, what is the lifespan of popularity of something like that? Because we haven't really hit the crest of, like, what happens when some of these YouTube, like, what happens when someone retires, or what happens when someone just loses their popularity or something?
Yeah.
Because that'll let us also see, like, how the ads migrate around. Like, will people feel burned by that, or will they continue? Will they, like,
Well, know, and like, then ad networks, right? Like Maker, there's going to be other people that rise up and you know, replace them and move around and collect different interests, right? There may be, you know, ad networks of YouTubers, of people, excuse me, who represent YouTubers who solely do home and garden videos.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're selling ads for Home Depot and stuff like that.
Specific YouTube channels rather than YouTube as a service.
Exactly. Yeah. Like how we're creating YouTube channels soon.
Right.
About erotic, furry video games that can only be played on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oof, man. We gotta find that niche, though.
We gotta find that niche, dog. That's where the money's at.
Yeah, it's... That's what I really want to see happen. But, I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine that it is going to be, like, a graceful transition for, like, I feel like we will have, like, another, I don't know, 10 or 15 years or so where it's still this, there's still this stark divide. But at a certain point, the pop stars, and I think they're already starting to do this, they will have to be more like the YouTube type thing. Like, that authenticity and stuff already is there, where it's I follow Nicki Minaj on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, you know, like,
I mean, you already see it, right, with the, like, what was the Twitter kerfuffle between Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift?
Oh yeah, which also, like, culminated in, like, what was probably, like, a staged ad thing or whatever, like, at the VMAs, like, all that stuff was, like, built up. Yeah, that's right. Well, okay, so
how dare you talk shit about T-Swift.
I think
my girl Tay.
The takeaway of this is that...
The
takeaway from it is that, Jimmy Kimmel, we challenge you to Rocket League.
Exactly.
To settle all this once and for all. Yep. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our... Well, it's not our YouTube channel, but we have videos up there.
Yeah.
Come down. Check it out.
YouTube.com/exp.net.
Also, give us a rating on iTunes and Stitcher if you like. It'll help us find new listeners.
Yeah. Twitch.tv/exp.net.
Yeah, and eventually YouTube Gaming, which we should talk about separately.
We will talk about YouTube Gaming. Well, we'll do stuff with YouTube Gaming. Yeah, exactly. Separately.
YouTube Game.
Yeah. All right. Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Oh, God.
That's not like PewDiePie yet?
Jesus Christ. Every time we disagree, there's a place you go to.